the First Midwest Bank Studio on State Street. This is WMVP WSHE-HD2 Chicago. You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Follow at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87 on Twitter.
All right, Bears getting ready for Tom Brady and the Bucs, the Super Bowl champions, the GOAT. We'll also talk some Bulls as the Bulls won their first game. Hawks look for their first win of the season. The NBA is tipped off. There's so much to get to with Michael Wilbon. He's brought to you by Waddle's Guys.
That is correct. HawkAuto.com, Ford, Chevy, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, Subaru, Cadillac, Mazda, and VW all in one place. HawkAuto.com. Where Chicagoland saves big.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Guess what today is?
It's Wilbon Day.
Woo-hoo!
Chicago native Michael Wilbon, host of Pardon the Interruption with Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN Chicago.
Usually on Wednesdays, but I saw Wilbon and the Countdown crew Madison Square Garden hugging a bunch of superstar famous people courtside. Greeny, Stephen A. It was good. Really good
Jaylen
stuff.
Jaylen was there? Wasn't Jaylen, Jaylen was there?
Yeah, but there were quite the celebrity list there.
Was Spike Lee, obviously.
Of course, yeah, and he was they were exhausted after that game. Michael, who was the most famous person you talked to last night?
I don't know about most famous. I guess that would have been Spike Lee. I'm not on terms with, say, Dustin Hoffman. But the most important person that I got a big hug from and we chatted for a second was Derrick Rose.
Oh.
Derrick Rose, whose resilience and whose toughness and resourcefulness, single-mindedness, staying in the league. He's in the league now for, 13 years? I mean, Derrick Rose hasn't been celebrated enough to come back from the injuries he's come back from and to play meaningful minutes and be a player of some consequence. No, he's not the MVP player that he launched himself to be. But he's a player of consequence after just injuries that have driven people out, driven people out of every sport, and Derrick Rose is still playing. It's phenomenal, and I hugged him and told him that last night. Proud to know him. Proud that he's from where I'm from. I love Derrick Rose.
Do you believe, Michael, that one day Derrick Rose will get his number one raised to the rafters at the United Center?
I don't know. I do think that it seems like there doesn't seem to be any rift between him and the organization. But I don't know. I was hoping that he might have been able to come back and play for the Bulls this year. And I think I can say with some great belief there was interest in that. But then, the Knicks value him. You know, Tibbs, I mean, it wasn't like they were going up against a team or a coach that just thought Derrick Rose was okay. You know what I mean? He got to a conference final and, got to, I don't know, about 3 or 4 minutes of being 2-0 up on LeBron James in the conference finals in 2000. What year was that? 2011. And then he got hurt the next year. And so, the Knicks and Tibbs want Derrick Rose, and they were not about to let him get away, and probably particularly not to the Bulls.
You couldn't have imagined a better way to get the season going than last night's Knicks and Celtics game, huh?
It was great. It was great to be in that place full again. It was just wonderful to be there, and a great game broke out. And I don't know if either one of those two teams will be great. I think that I kept thinking before the game the Knicks are going to be a little ahead of the Celtics this year, but I don't know that. I mean, if you started picking players, maybe the first two players you chose, if you were playing shirts and skins on a playground, maybe the first two players is Celtic. Maybe Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are the first two. But I don't know, man. I mean, maybe the Knicks have that first player now, the best player on the court. But it's quite the rivalry. It's exciting to be there. I've been for some bigger games than last night in that building. And I was talking about Julius Randle, by the way. But I've been to some more exciting games, bigger stakes games than that. Pretty exciting for an opener, though.
Yeah. Michael Wilbon joining us. It's Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. So I know that you were focused on that. You had television duties. I'm sure you caught up on the Bulls. And I know Detroit's...
I watched the Bulls.
Oh, good, good, good. What'd you think?
Well, you know, I thought they could, I don't know, a little more handily dismiss Detroit without number one overall pick Cade Cunningham. But Charles Barkley said something to me today, and he's right. Charles said, remember, first of all, I think there's three or four bad teams in the league this year. That's it. You know, sometimes you can go into a season with the NBA where there's three or four great teams, and a lot of them are bad. That's not the case this year. And Charles said something to me that makes so much sense. He said, remember, it takes about a third of the season before you know you stink. And he says, when you go out and get a road victory to start the season in your division, that's a good win. You know, you might be able to get that win more easily in January, but if that win is hard fought in October, November. And that's a great point that Charles makes. The Pistons don't know they stink. They don't know that yet, or they're supposed to. And maybe they won't when they get Cade Cunningham and get him in the lineup. He's got an ankle injury now. So there's that. And then, not on a relative scale, just on a scale, like the Bulls are really exciting to watch. I don't know if they play enough defense, and I don't know if they have enough size. I just don't. I defense is bothersome. Because even though everybody says, everyone's observation in the NBA industry is that Zach LaVine is sort of committed in a greater way to being a leader, to being a more complete player, not just an offensive guy who's, you know, into his shots and how many he's going to put up. Everybody who's been around Zach LaVine for 30 seconds says that he has come back from Team USA a more committed, more complete player. And we could see that, I think, last night. But, you know, and by the way, I mean, his numbers might not have been great, but I thought Lonzo Ball was terrific in his spots last night.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they got to get, they got to get Kobe White back in the lineup, which is going to take some time. It's good that Patrick Williams is there now. I mean, I think there was some doubt. There was some wondering whether he'd be ready to start the season. He started the season. Vooch is going to have to play some better defense than he plays.
Yes.
But he, you know, on a terrible night, he had 15-15. So, you know, this is what, you know, everybody's not going to have a great night on opening night. But when you don't, what are you still able to do as a team?
Mike, what are you expecting from Zach? He has done a very nice job of improving every single year. And as you mentioned, he said a lot of important things about what others feel about him. But you personally, this is a really big year for him and this team because you need to make some tough decisions throughout the course of this year and going into next year.
Yeah.
What are you expecting Zach to prove in this season?
That he can lead the team to the playoffs. That's what I'm expecting him to do. He can lead a team to the playoffs. He can be a guy who I often compare these guys. Zach's a couple of years older, maybe only 1 year older, but I compare him to Devin Booker.
Me too.
They're very similar in what they can do offensively. And Devin Booker is a more of a fighter on defense. I think that's fair to say in the last couple of years, even before Chris Paul got there. And Chris Paul is the person who changed the dynamic of the Phoenix Suns last year to get them to the finals. The addition of Vucevic is not going to – that's not the same thing. It's not the same difference maker. But I expect Zach to be their best player and leader. And let's see if he can do that. It's very simple, you know, and he's going to have to – it's an ensemble they've got now. You know, they've got a nice little ensemble of five or six players when they get Kobe White back in there. And can that group, you know, can they grow? They got some interesting role players, some scrappers. We didn't see the kid from North Carolina last night. Was it Tony Bradley played backup center? We didn't see him. I guess we'll see some of these guys at home, maybe more likely tomorrow night against New Orleans. But, you know, Charles Barkley confirmed. I said Charles said, he said, I'm gonna make your heart flutter. He said today on PTI, the Bulls are a team I'm watching. The Bulls are a team that I think we're going to be really good and make the playoffs. And that felt great. Hearing that come from Chuck, but you know they got to do it. And I, you know, when I look at New York and Boston last night, they're ahead of the Bulls. They just are. You know, they're ahead. They were in the playoffs last year. There's a toughness, there's a resoluteness about them the Bulls don't have yet. But can the Bulls develop that? Can they get you? Look, you got to get to the playoffs and lose. Nobody does what the Suns did. No, nobody does that. You have to get to the playoffs in the first round and get your butt whipped. 99% of the time. Can the Bulls do that? That's what I'm looking for them to do.
I think so. I think they can. Michael, I was on Instagram earlier today, and there's an Instagram account from ESPN on the NBA coverage. I think it's NBA on ESPN. And they were doing different pictures on possible trade scenarios for Ben Simmons. And then there was one under Chicago Bulls. And they wrote, the Bulls get Ben Simmons. The Sixers get Zach LaVine and Derrick Jones.
Right there. You can stop right there.
Michael, I said this could be the dumbest proposed trade I've ever read.
Well, not the dumbest, but look. All those proposed trades, most of them are just people sitting around thinking them up. And they haven't had as much experience in a lot of cases watching the NBA and fretting over a local team as you and I have. So pay no attention to it. It's not going to happen. That would be just dumb. And not the stupidest ever, but no. I said on the air, I don't know, one day, the last 2 days, let's not turn Ben Simmons into Bill Russell, okay?
Yeah.
Because Ben Simmons has got a big hole. And by the way, I'm not even sure the biggest hole is that he can't shoot and score. He's fragile. He's fragile. I don't want a fragile player to build around. I don't. And so just like Daryl Morey and Doc, you know, don't want to take, you know, 60 cents on the dollar back for Ben Simmons, I don't want to take 60 cents on the dollar back for Zach LaVine. And while Ben Simmons may not be 60%, the Bulls don't have such great offensive players they can just get rid of Zach LaVine. I mean, Zach LaVine is at his position. He's one of, I know there's some tweeners, and you don't count him with Steph Curry and Dame Lillard. And there's some Kyrie Irving. There's some tweeners, some guys who have the ball all the time. Zach is not a true point guard. So we look at that two spot, in a more natural two spot with Devin Booker. He's in that group. And I'm not as enamored of Ben Simmons as a lot of people are. He's a terrific player. I'd like to draft him. I'm not going to trade. I'm not going to give up the room for him.
Or pay him $40 million, right? Hang in there. I want to ask you some Bears questions. And you made a comment last week about storytelling when you were in studio. I want to ask you the total story, some of the most fascinating players you've covered. And we were discussing that earlier today. And if Tom Brady fits into that, we'll get to that with Michael Wilbon coming up next.
It's Waddle and Sylvie.
Hi.
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 Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN _ Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Wilbon's been one of the best storytellers ever, from his days as a columnist to what they do with Tony and him on PTI.
Some of the greatest stories we get to hear in the hallway after shows sometimes.
Yeah, he was in studio with us in our first Midwest Bank studio. Usually Wednesday at 5, and Wilbon joins us right now. And I want to continue the conversation. So I brought up, like, yesterday, Michael, Waddle was mesmerized by Tom Brady's skin. Like, here's a guy. I mean, think about the total package, Michael. Like, he's married to a supermodel. He was drafted number 199 overall, and he becomes a superstar. He's now playing at the age of 44, and he's playing as well as any player in the National Football League. Like, on and off the field, it is just one of those stories that you say is fascinating.
By the way, I'm envious of Freddy Krueger's skin as well, because mine is so bad. But yeah, the moral of the story is if you could put a list together of the reasons why Tom Brady's great, that list would go on forever.
So who are the other guys that come to your mind as the most fascinating? Obviously, they have to start and be really good players, but like, who were fascinating to you on this subjective list?
Well, I mean, some of mine don't include famous people. They may include people who are really good at what they do. I mean, I'm trying to think of an example of that where you wouldn't, and not a Hall of Famer, you know, maybe never been all pro, but you love sitting around talking to them. Now, look, there are people who are way up on the playing meter too. I mean, Charles Barkley, we talk about Charles all the time. There's a reason that, you know, beyond playing, that Charles fascinates so many people. And you know, God, off the top of my head, I'm probably bad right now coming up with people who fascinate me in that way. But it sometimes has nothing to do with playing. It has to do with just, you talk about storytelling, interest, sitting around. Like, who do I like sitting around talking to? And there are any, you know, there's some coaches. There's some people who are a million years old. So if I'm going to sit around, if I'm going to choose a group in the lobby to sit around and listen to basketball stories from, Hubie Brown is going to be at the top of the list, the top of it. Because no one has better stories than Hubie. No one. Jack Ramsey, the same way. Jack Ramsey once started a sentence where a bunch of us were sitting in the lobby, you know, having drinks after a game, playoff game, and Jack Ramsey says, "All right, I'm going to tell you guys about the night I traded Wilt." Okay, anybody got a better lead in than that?
No, that's pretty good.
I mean, all these guys who are on Instagram who think they have great stories, you got a better one than, let me tell you about trading Wilt when I traded Wilt. So there's all kinds of people. I'll give you a young guy who's one of the great storytellers in America. Nobody knows it, or not enough people know it. I know it. And he should be on TV, and I've told him this. It's Earl Watson. Earl Watson played at UCLA, who's coached, you know, at multiple levels. Earl Watson, one of the great storytellers of all time. And not enough people know this. Like, if I ran a network, I would just say, bring me Earl Watson. I'm going to put him on somewhere. So there are people like that that folks don't realize. And the storytelling isn't the only thing. But if you're sitting around and it's just a bunch of guys, I mean, storytelling is way up there, man. And you just want to sit and listen to certain people do that.
How about, like, an athlete that mesmerizes you or stands out to you? Not from the storytelling point, but like
you telling,
like,
the story about him. Sylvia, you on my list?
Yeah, Sylvia and I both agreed that Tiger Woods is on that list.
Here's my list, Michael. It's Tiger number one, Mike Tyson number two, Tom Brady number three, Muhammad Ali number four, and Dennis Rodman.
What's the list?
Most fascinating athletes in my world that I've lived through.
And some of the fascination is because there has been trouble attached to some of the stories, which makes it even
maybe. See, that part doesn't. I get what you're saying, by the way, and I wouldn't say you're wrong. It doesn't. That fascinates me less than other things. So, like, Tiger's fascinating because of accomplishments, but Tiger's not giving. He's not engaged enough. Even I've been in Tiger's company with just me, Tiger, and Charles. And Roy Green, another fascinating guy, who played two ways. The last two-way player in the NFL, Roy Green.
Great player.
Great player. And not observed, not known for that. He should be. But Tiger's not on my list. Mike Tyson more so, and I know Mike. I know Mike maybe a little better than Tiger. Michael Jordan is certainly on my list. I mean, you know, I tell you who's on my list. Doug Collins.
Yeah, we love Doug
Collins. Do you realize that the history of the league and how many Doug Collins is like Forrest Gump in that he's been so many. Doug Collins was on the 72 team that got cheated out of an Olympic gold medal.
Totally.
Doug Collins coached Michael Jordan.
Right.
I mean,
he was the number one overall pick in the draft.
He's the number one overall pick in the draft. That's right. Oh my God. So there are people that, you know. Yeah, if I'm going to pick people to sit around with, Tom Brady's not on my list. I've never heard Tom Brady say anything that interested me. Not anything that fascinates me. Nothing that interests me.
What about
he's the GOAT.
But
the
story of being 44 and playing at the level you're playing at.
Well, I'd rather hear somebody else tell it, because he doesn't tell it all that convincingly. I'd rather hear somebody who knows him tell it. Maybe I want to hear Jeff Saturday tell it. Okay, I'll tell you a guy who's as fascinating as they come, and he's great, Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
Peyton Manning is so smart and so funny that, yes, Peyton Manning, but not Tom Brady. No, not for me.
What is the storyline going to be Sunday at like 8 o'clock after the Bears and Bucks game is done?
Is that a 4 o'clock game this week?
Yeah, it's 3:25, whatever. I think, 3:25.
Yeah, 4:30.
Yeah.
It's going to be the Tom Brady got revenge for last year for fourth down.
That's what we've been talking about.
He's going to maul them. He's going to maul them. Look, I'm not saying that Tom Brady is not a fascinating person, because he is. His accomplishments. Tom Brady, like Michael Jordan, and I know there's an admiration society between the two of those guys. Tom Brady is ruthless, man. He's a ruthless dude. He's like MJ. When you get to that level of greatness, your ruthlessness is part of your profile. Tom Brady is going to maul the Bears. He's going to put them in his pocket. He's going to own them. Aaron Rodgers,
second week in
Aaron Rodgers owns the Bears because of frequency. But Tom Brady, man, Tom Brady's vicious.
Were you mad at Rodgers for the statement? We had
not
a lot of mad Bears fans.
Not at all. Not at all. Let the people who run the Bears do something about it.
Right.
Exactly.
That's what we said. Like, I'm more mad at the Bears front office and ownership for the years and generations that this has gone over.
You let somebody go 22-5 against you, it's your fault, not his.
Did you think at any point in that game, and I know that the Bears cut the lead to 17-14 in the fourth quarter, I guess maybe it's just because I'm conditioned to expect the worst when they're playing the Packers. I personally never really felt that the Bears were going to win that game. Did you?
No. I didn't think that at all because they're also just not there yet. I mean, it's okay. I wasn't mad at this loss. As I was telling my brother, didn't believe me. I was so much more excited about the sky on Sunday afternoon than I was the Bears, because the sky was playing for a championship
with
an unbelievable story. Speaking of fascinating people, all right,
Candace Parker
is one of them. Yes, she is, and I have gotten to know her recently in the last few years, and I love everything about Candace Parker, and her as a person and her story. And she can tell it because Candace Parker is eloquent. Mm-hmm. The Bears were not, you know, they weren't going to win that game. It's just not Justin Fields' time yet. He doesn't know enough yet. I'm hoping that, you know, he will be coached in a way by somebody over the next few years that he will be able to be put in a position where he can play for a championship. That time is not now. So I was much more excited about the sky than the Bears on that particular day.
Do you believe a guy like AD, when LeBron is retired, could eventually do what Candace Parker did and leave L.A. and want to try to win one back at home?
It's a great question. I do know that Anthony Davis has a great relationship with the city. You know, we have talked about that. Or I've walked in the locker rooms and he has said, hey, you've been home lately, and so there's not any, sometimes people have an awkward relationship with their hometown. From what I know about Anthony Davis, and we've not talked so many times or so long, but I know, you know, his biggest secrets about Chicago and whether he's a Lems or a Leon's guy, you know, back in the day he was old enough for that. I don't know that. But I know that we've talked, I've asked him point blank, and he's asked me, so what's your relationship like with home? We talked about that a little bit, and his is good. So I don't know. That's a great question. He has really – it's like, you know, one of the things Dwayne Wade – that was important to Dwayne Wade, and we saw it happen a little bit because he wanted to plan. But when Dwayne Wade took those meetings with the Bulls and back in 2011 or 10 or whatever it was important for Dwayne Wade to have a great working relationship with his hometown. And somebody may call you guys, oh, that's not – no, it is true. I know because I talked to him about it. And that was important to Dwayne, and in a business way, and who the people are, and with the Reinsdorfs, and I'm sure other business people, maybe with the Pritzkers, I don't know the other people that Dwayne might have been referring to, but you know, these guys are off. Look, they're businesses, they're miniature empires when they make that much money and have that much influence and are influencers. So I hope that's a cool question about AD and whether he feels that way about the city. I know he has a good relationship with our hometown, and I hope it is maintained through the end of his career.
Mike, to piggyback on that thought, we played a clip from DeMar DeRozan on a podcast recently, and when he talked about deciding on the Bulls, obviously money was involved, I get it, but you know, the Lakers were part of the decision, but he talked about, in a couple of instances, he talked about the city being a great city and the franchise has got a you know, obviously a great history. Do you believe that the feeling around the league is changing a little bit for the better about this team, and maybe some of that can be kind of advanced by this group, and if they have some success that the rest of the league will say, hey, yes, maybe Chicago's a place we want to go?
No, Chicago's not. It's not about the team. It's not about the franchise. It isn't. It's about where guys want to play in warm weather in markets that have that badge, that stamp. Chicago's not going to have that. It doesn't mean we're never going to get a free agent, but that's not. Look at the destinations. Who gets free agents? Look at
LA,
the New York Knicks
LA,
and the overstatement about how important the Knicks are. Do they get free agents? No, not really. Not huge ones. Miami and L.A. Those are the places that get. Now, you may have guys look at
Arizona.
Small markets. And Arizona maybe, you know, could become one of those places much more so now as the profile of that city changes. And all that that means, the demographics, the cultural outlook, the perception, is it friendly? Is it friendly for African-American players who comprise the biggest chunk of those free agents? You know, that shifts a little bit, and it becomes more inclusive depending on what's going on. But Chicago is attractive to those players for a lot of reasons. A lot of reasons. And some of those reasons I just mentioned, but obviously not for the weather. And so I've had guys tell me, dude, I would love to play in Chicago if the season was like May to October. Well, it's not. You know, I mean, that would be the WNBA season, so maybe, you know, the Sky can get more free agents. But that's not, you know, the factors that people bring into play are not, they're not paying attention to what I'm paying attention to when I listen to people. Now, can a franchise get to be so successful that it can sort of override some of those? Yes. Yeah. But that's, you know, let's see what happens over these next few years. Can they fill in with key free agents? Yes. Are they going to get the biggest free agent in the market? When Kareem looked to leave Milwaukee, did it have anything to do with some hatred for Milwaukee? No. No, it didn't. No, he wanted to go to L.A. And so we can see, you know, 50 years, you know, of history with that and whether it's forcing a trade or as free agent.
Michael, great stuff. Appreciate it. We'll talk next week.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, you guys. Appreciate it.
There's something a week from today that I'm very excited about. I want to tell you about it. And I got revenge on someone that I've been last night. This is good. A revenge story. Do you like getting revenge on people?
Yeah, I love their good revenge story.
I got revenge on someone that you know well, and I'll tell you about it next.
Miss a show? All your faves ready and waiting on the ESPN Chicago app.
You are listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
So you want a revenge story, huh? I thought I got him pretty good. So yesterday,
you're a guy that likes a good bit of revenge.
I
right?
do. Yeah.
You like to exact a pound of flesh.
Yeah. I did not tell you about this story. So you know, yesterday I'm watching the Bulls game, and you know me, the Bulls Kool-Aid was flowing. I'm optimistic about this team. I'm excited to see good Bulls basketball for the first time in years. Yeah. I think they're. What AK has done, I like the fact that they've been aggressive. I like the fact that guys want to come here. Lonzo wanted to come here. DeRozan wanted to come here. He's flipped the roster pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm watching the Bulls game, and I was admiring Alex Caruso. I've said that Alex Caruso is going to be one of those guys. He was beloved in L.A. Who phrased it yesterday? Oh, it was Adam Amin. Wasn't it who said that Alex Caruso is the LeBron James of playing with LeBron James?
Right.
Isn't that what it was?
He
was closing out NBA Finals games.
Yes.
And you know, he's really evolved and he's become a good, solid player, and he does the little things. There's not enough guys who just thrive on doing the little things. So I tweeted out last night, during the game, as expected, Bulls fans love Caruso already. Like, the Caruso stuff was... Everyone was loving. It's flowing. The DE was deed. Very good defensively. Sets guys up. So Jason Benetti reached out, took my tweet, and he tweeted it, and he texted it to me, and he wrote, times 1 trillion, because he was watching too, and how much he loves Alex Caruso. And so I said to Benetti, I says, it's how I'm going to feel about Nick Madrigal next year. I feel like Nick Madrigal is in that same vein, does things differently, just like a lot of these NBA players who shoot threes, who are dunking and scoring at will. Alex Caruso will do the little things. Like, Nick Madrigal is different. Nick Madrigal is going to put the ball in play. He's going to stress defenses and do things.
I like it.
So I said, it's also how I'm going to feel about Nick Madrigal next year. And Benetti texted back, I'm so sad about that. And I sent him, thanks, socks. And got a little revenge. And he wrote, you are gross. And I said, learn from the best. So for all Cubs fans out there, as Eloy Jimenez hit that home run at Wrigley Field, and Jason Benetti, and we always play it, goes, thanks, Cubs. Like, it's a famous Chicago soundbite now. I was able to send back to Jason Benetti what he deserved, and that was a little thanks, socks.
I think that's fair.
And then I got a little revenge there. I caught him off guard. He had his guard down thinking we were talking Bulls basketball.
Yeah.
And I hit him with a little thanks, socks.
Thanks, Cubs!
There you go. Thanks, socks.
It's pretty nice.
So you just compared Madrigal to a bench NBA role player.
No, I was just comparing my thank you. I got a everyday second baseman.
Seems subpar to the average. I mean, you're comparing Madrigal to Alex Caruso.
Yes, that's what I'm doing. Yes.
Yeah, right.
Don't you
Caruso's
agree?
Caruso's a bench role player. I think the Sox win in that situation.
But a guy who still is
so thank super, you, Sox.
Is super valuable. No, thank you,
yes.
Sox. Thank
yeah.
you.
Thanks. I think I just did on to you what you tried to do to Benetti.
No, thanks, Sox.
Thanks, Cubs.
The Cubs got an everyday second baseman.
Caruso's everyday?
He's an everyday player.
Well, yeah, but
he's
bench.
He's an everyday closer.
Guy.
Yeah, but he
you
plays.
You want more from Madrigal than that.
He plays an important role. He fits. He's a scrappy player.
Yeah, but you need Nick Madrigal to be almost a star. Not quite Altuve, but close.
Do you think? No, you think Altuve.
Well, I didn't say he was going to be Altuve. I said close. He needs to be a slapper there.
You think slapper?
Yeah, slapping hit. He has zero power. How much power does Madrigal have? Does he have any power?
He had like two home runs, I think.
So he's got a slapper around the ballpark.
Maybe Benetti's trolling you. And you think you're trolling him?
No, I got him.
Okay.
I got him. No matter what Bleck wants to say, okay. I got him, and I'm confident.
No, I got him. Don't worry, guys. I got him.
Thanks, Sox.
Thanks, Cubs!
Did he respond?
Oh, yeah. He said, you are gross. And I said, I learned from the best.
Well, maybe he was talking about something entirely different. The fact that you always have food on your face.
Did he listen to the show yesterday?
He's sitting next to you and watching the Sox game, and you get a hot dog all over your face and a hamburger all over your face.
I am Oppo Fred Huebner when it comes to Jason Benetti. There are like guys who can do no wrong in my world. Benetti's one of those dudes. I just love Benetti. Good guy. Great at what he does.
Maybe he's trolling you.
I trolled him.
Thanks, Cubs!
Not Benetti.
He's trolling you by letting you think that you're trolling him.
I don't want to tell Benetti how to do that, but Jason Benetti, if you're listening, the next time Sylvie does that to you, say, I've got some Sox math for you. Just send him the finger.
Number one.
The answer's one.
The answer's one.
That's not bad.
Thanks, Cubs!
I don't think Jason Benetti would ever send you an emoji of giving the finger.
You never know.
Okay.
You never know. Bill in Orland, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Billy?
Sylvie, the only problem is Nick Madrigal hasn't done anything for the Cubs yet. Nothing.
Well, you wait. You wait till he does do something.
The worst draft pick ever in baseball. The guy's a total bust.
You would have loved. You're going to. How'd Hernandez do for you? You like Cesar?
Nick Madrigal's average exit velocity is like 41 miles an hour.
Yeah. Well, how hard was Craig Kimbrell throwing? Like twice that? And did he get anybody out for you guys?
Yeah, but that's not what you mentioned. You mentioned Zach Stock, Bank Cup. You mentioned Nick Madrigal.
I got an everyday second baseman and Cody Hoyer, a good young bullpen arm. Thanks, Sox.
Said Madrigal.
Thanks, Bell. See ya.
Thanks, Cubs.
You know me.
I was trolling you now.
I overlove the short guy, too. You know I'm going to be all. I was Cubs fans for Madrigal when he was on the Sox. And then he got on my team.
You do have an Augie Ojeda jersey.
No,
at home,
I hated Augie Ojeda.
Small guy as well, though. How could you hate him?
He wasn't a good player. He was like a. You know, like him and Darwin Barney. Like, okay, what were they? Darwin Barney couldn't hit. This guy's a .317 hitter.
Okay.
Nick and Lyons, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Nick?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
You tell us.
Sylvie, I feel you. I'm a diehard Sox fan. And when we lost Madrigal, I was sick.
See?
I was sick.
Cause thanks, it's like, Sox.
You have a team with a roster loaded with home run hitters. You want that 300 hitter on your team to get on base.
That's what I'm comparing with Caruso. Caruso does it differently. He's not going to score a bunch of points. He plays an important role. He may not start, but he's vital to winning. And I think Nick Madrigal is going to be different than most baseball players, and I like that.
Right. It's even on a team, if you have a team like the Sox have built, you're going to want that guy, like with, say, two outs, someone you know who can probably get on base. I don't care if he hits home runs. We have guys to do that.
Yeah. It would have been, you know, Nick, it would have been nice if one of your White Sox players would have hit a home run in the postseason. You all, your entire roster hit like Nick Madrigal.
See, Nick, now you know what I deal with daily. You called in to snuggle up next to him, and then immediately as you get close to him, what does he do? The fangs come out, he bites you.
I just tried to give him props, and he's just tearing me down.
Thanks, Nick. I appreciate it. There's Nick. We're goofing around.
Yeah, Nick, you saw it.
Yeah, did you, on this day, I want to play you something, too, from on this day, all right? And the person involved in this Chicago highlight that happened on this day.
This day.
For the Chicago Bears was involved in a controversy after this game, and he acknowledged it to me on Twitter.
This hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football, Chicago's Big Ten team. Join the Wildcats at Ryan Field this fall for matchups with Minnesota and Iowa. Tickets on sale now at nusports.com.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie.
ESPN 1000 and now on FM at 100.3 HD2.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
We had conversations earlier in the show, whether it was, hey, what if Brady had become a Bear in 2020? That was more unrealistic. But the Bruce Arians story was a good one as the Bears faced Tampa. We talked about that, how they had him in the building. He was reigning coach of the year. They elected for Trustman instead. We were talking about the Dave McGinnis fiasco when he was wanting the job and basically given the job, but he still walked away from the job.
Who did he end up with again after
Dick
that?
Geron.
Dick Geron.
Yeah. Dick Geron. Super, one of the nicest guys around. And they won in 2001. That team was fun, 13-3, but it was one of those flare up again, you know, where, you know, yeah.
Sometimes you just fall into good things.
It was like that 18 season. That defense, very similar. They found the ball.
Yeah.
You know, Mike Brown, that was when Mike Brown was healthy and great. Brian Urlacher, a young Brian Urlacher, Ted Washington.
Oh, Big Ted and Keith Traylor.
Keith Traylor, remember Keith Traylor rumbles. Yeah, it was a fun. Jim Miller and Shane Matthews were their quarterbacks that year.
Jim Miller had a hell of a year, didn't he?
He did. He had a good year. Anthony Thomas was the rookie of the year.
The A-Train.
So that, like, we had been going through a lot of these weird stories. Here's another one. I think I tweeted this out. This Day in Sports, which is a Chicago-based one. Went back to, I believe it was in 2007, when the Bears were just coming off the Super Bowl. Rex was hurt, and Brian Griese was on the team. Brian Griese is in the Monday Night Football booth right now, and they were playing on the road in Philadelphia. And Brian Griese, down the stretch, came in and won that game for the Bears. Here are the highlights.
But under a minute to play, the Bears, starting from their own three, are driving down the field. On the plus side of the field now is Bernard Berrien for a 25-yard gain. The Bears stop the clock, clock it down. So it's 2nd and 10 when Griese hits Devin Hester.
I like the way they're trying to get him the ball, not only deep and on punt returns, but on screens and regular pass routes.
And then after a spike, it is Mohsin Mohamed in the end zone with 9 seconds to go. And the Chicago Bears with their season on the line.
So they won. They win.
It was a hell of a drive.
It was October 21st, 2007, all right? And
it's a piece of art.
After the game, and so I tweeted out, I go, and the Bears made Brian Griese apologize the very next day. True story. This is so Bears. So it's Lovie Smith as head coach. It's Ron Turner as the offensive coordinator. Brian Griese went to the podium and talked about how on that last drive with them on the road, the headset in his helmet went out and he had called all the plays in the game-winning drive. And the very next day, after this win on the road to keep their season alive while they had injuries, the Bears made Brian Griese on a Monday go into the Hallis Hall media room and apologize for saying that the helmet went out and that it was a total team effort.
That to this day still rings odd to me. It just does, because like Ron Turner was never this big egomaniac offensive coordinator either.
I don't know why.
I don't know why they felt compelled to do that.
And Randy Merkin said, and then so Brian, I tweeted at Brian Griese, and Brian Griese did respond, and he responded with a shrug, like,
yeah,
all right. And Merkin asked me, he goes, it's got to be true, right? If Griese. Oh, I know it's true.
Yeah,
I know it's not. It's, and Brian Griese, didn't he acknowledge it too when we discussed it last year with him when we had him on before
he's
the Monday
night
game?
He's all about truth.
Well, I mean, he's been involved in two weird Bears controversies.
He's all about, actually, like, if he says it, you can count on it being true.
Yeah, yeah. So
it was the Nick Foles conversation.
It was Nick Foles, and that they like how he said that sometimes he knows the play's not going to work and that he doesn't have time to run what Nagy wants him to run based on the protection that they're dealing with. And remember how quickly that relationship between Foles and guys who he'd worked with in the past went south.
It's just amazing how over the course of the last 3+ years, there's been so many different offensive things go on. Issues and no real answers.
And it's not just the last 3 years. This is just Bears.
Yeah. No,
it's
just Aaron
Cromer, the offensive coordinator, giving Ian Rappaport a story and getting busted for talking to the reporter off the record and saying bad stuff about Jay Cutler.
Yeah.
Remember that one in Trestman's last year? I mean, there's so many just odd stories, not hiring Bruce Arians because of the mock press conference. It's the reason why this team doesn't beat Aaron. These are the things, are illustrations on why guys like Aaron Rodgers, who is great, go 22-5 against the Bears.
Maybe with you in attendance, maybe you and Mason and the guys are the inspiration for the Bears to do it again and do the unthinkable and beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, a team led by Tom Brady.
I'm going to take, it's a good way to fade me. I'm going to take the points. 12 is a lot of points. Going to take the points. I'm rooting for the Bears anyway. Why not? Why not?
Okay.
Well, are we both playing? We're going to play the puck line tonight for the Blackhawks.
I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in. I think it's +170, I think.
So they got to win by two, right?
Yeah. They're going to win by nine.
This may be the game where they take out all their frustrations and they
win
5-2. It's like a 5-2 final.
Yeah.
Hawks win.
Now, if I get beat by an empty netter, like, now I'm going to be upset, you know. Now I'm going to be upset. You've always got to play, you know.
What do you mean if you get beat by an empty netter?
Well,
the empty netter means that you're winning and the other team's taking the net out, taking the goalie out of the net.
Right. But if they score late and they lose by one instead of two because the empty net is, you know, they've got the extra
saying the extra skater scores on the Hawks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, like, look, I don't want this thing to go south.
No one talks hockey like we talk hockey.
Listen,
nobody.
I want to win by two. That's all I'm saying is win by two.
I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm going to load that into DraftKings right now. Hawks on the puck line.
Wouldn't it be typical?
Let's get pucked.
Typical. We've got a 2-goal lead. They pull their goalie. Next thing you know, I'm a loser.
Well, that's hockey, baby.
I don't want it to be hockey.
You know,
baby,
you
like
know
that.
How the puck bounces.
I
so
do.
You got to have some puck luck here too tonight, Waddle.
Just
so
saying.
We talk. Take the body.
I. You know what?
Get
my
in
money.
Front of the net.
My money is already in. Already in. I put $10 down to win $27.
You got to be good on the special teams too. All right. All right. We
got some face-offs tonight as well.
Bleck and Abdallah. Great work by them. They have an hour show tonight before we go to Game 5. Of the
Dodgers and
NLCS.
Braves.
Yes, the Dodgers looking to stay alive. They are down 3-1.
Yes, sir.
Thank you to Dan Weeder and Michael Wilbon. For Waddle, I'm Sylvie.
Enjoy your trip.
Thank you. I will report back on Monday from Tampa, hopefully with a win.
Fantastic.
For Waddle, I'm Sylvie. It's ESPN 1000. Have yourself a great Thursday night.
It's the classic.
I am really excited
That was a big thrill.
Hi, it's Andre Dawson, including myself, Ed Belfour.
Who's getting wild tonight? That's what I'm talking about, baby.
No hi from you.
What?
No hi from you.
I give him more buys than highs.
Waddle, waddle, waddle. Then he waddled away. Waddle, waddle. Till the very next day. Bum, 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 bum.
And thank you to all and to all a good night.